afternoon. Like Teresa said, this is going to focus on identification of vulnerable populations and how to best address their needs during a disaster. We're all vulnerable during a disaster. If people weren't vulnerable, we wouldn't call it a disaster. But there are those that, because of uniqueness, make them more vulnerable. And so that's really what we're trying to do in Florida, is to come up with a way to, one, identify who the groups are and begin to quantify them, but to develop a system of information so that whoever is responding will have some idea of what they're going to, how they're best meeting those community needs. There's a handout on the back table, not of the presentation, but of the model. So if you want to pick that up on your way out, you're welcome to. Here's the disclaimer we all have to put in there. You've probably seen it ad nauseum today. Okay, first of all, what we're looking at is, one, that we all know that there's varying definitions of what a vulnerable population is. We call them special needs, we call them vulnerable, we call them at risk. And really, it really doesn't matter. The thing is, we know that there are people who are at risk and that there are varying degrees of risk. In Florida, we have it well defined both in statute and rule of what a special needs client is that potentially could show up in the shelter or would need assistance during a disaster. And one of the things that we've found in a lot of response is that there are those that are vulnerable all the time, regardless of what the event is, what the scenario is, and then those that become vulnerable by nature of the event. Some examples of those that are always vulnerable are those that are your medically complex, functionally disabled, frail elderly, or your infants, those under two. Those that can become vulnerable by a disaster, by an event, can be those that are over 65 or those that have chronic conditions that have well-maintained. They have their medications, they're independent, but when a disaster happens, for us it's typically a hurricane, on the end of the month, and Katrina was a prime example of that, that when do most of your Medicare recipients receive their mail order meds? The end of the month. So now you have a group of individuals who are made vulnerable that otherwise may not have been had they had access to their medications. The other thing that we saw very clearly in Wilma was we had a large population of seniors who lived in high-rise buildings, fully independent, going about their daily business. Then you take away the power, and they're on the 35th floor. There's no elevator. And so now they are vulnerable and at risk for a poor health outcome. And that's really where our focus is trying to prevent an adverse health outcome, regardless of what their vulnerability is. But the bottom line is, fundamentally, we have that all planning must address those that are most at risk for an adverse outcome. The model and the approach that we've taken for analysis has really focused on three basic elements. And that's really to help us to identify, one, who is at risk, the people. What are their needs? What do they look like? Second is, what is the system, be it the healthcare system or a support system? We tend to focus on what are the healthcare system needs for those that are at risk, but there are other systems as well, such as the transportation system or the infrastructure system, which may be your utility and gas and those kinds of things. And so what does that system look like that supports those individuals on a day-to-day basis? And then finally, who are the providers and or what do they need to know, whether they're the providers on a daily basis or whether they're the first responders going in? What is it that they need to do? And so by looking at it from these three perspectives has really helped us to get a better focus. And for that, what we've come up with is a set of questions for each of these areas. And they focus around, and they're general, and they focus for each group. And I'm not going to read you all of these. There, you can read them yourselves. But what you can do with them, they were formed initially generally, and you can then, for each population group, there may be a need to tweak the question just a bit to make it a little more defined for that particular group. But in general, these are the types of these questions will help you get at what it is you need to know about that specific group. And for each question, when we initially started this process, is that you identify what is the data you need to answer the question. And if you know a data source, fine, then you identify it. But if not, you don't get wrapped around the axle. You just try to identify what is the data I need to know to answer that question. Because in some cases, you may be able to identify a proxy data source that could give you a good estimate of what that, how to answer that question. And we did this with Oxygen Dependent because there's not a standardized data source out there or a consistent data source that we could apply statewide. And that's really what we're looking at, is trying to apply this in a systematic way. And so what I did was, for Oxygen Dependent, I found a Medicare reimbursement data for what percentage of their total reimbursement was for home oxygen therapy, and took that percentage and applied it to our over 65 population to give us a rough estimate of how many oxygen-dependent clients might be in the community. And so these are the questions for the system. And like I said, while the primary focus is on the healthcare system, there are other systems that support these individuals on a day-to-day basis and that can also work to help to identify how a means to communicate with them or to assist you during a response. But these questions can help to identify those partnerships and those other support systems. And then finally, what is it we need to know about the providers who provide service for them, as well as what do we need to know for the first responders who may not be familiar with the population group? And so what we're doing is really trying to come at it from identifying who is at risk, using information that we have on a daily basis, building on our past experience, and fortunately in Florida, as many of you know, we have a lot of experience with response, particularly in the last few years, and then beginning to quantify this at a systematic way and using data sources that we in public health are very good at collecting data and developing reports and having that information available. But what we haven't typically done in the past is pull these various reports about individuals, about groups that we've collected, link them with other data sets, and begin to look at what is the vulnerability in a community and developing a profile for each community so that we can then, and for us we've done it on a countywide basis, to have an understanding of what that community looks like before the disaster happens, so that when something happens, we know where they were yesterday. For the first time this year, what we did, we typically do some kind of get ready, if you will, activities before hurricane season starts, because it comes around every year. And what we did this year was to begin to pull a lot of this data together in what we call a vulnerability snapshot. And these were the population groups that we had data for all 67 counties, and it was the first time we were able to put this together. And what we did was combined, put the data together for all the 67. Some of this was census data, some of this was state health data that we had available to us, our program data such as the brain and spinal cord injured clients, our children's with special medical needs, other agency data for our developmentally disabled population, as well as the dialysis data which came from the organization End-Stage Renal Disease Network. And what we did was the common denominator for all of this data was the zip code level. We took this down to the zip code level. I know in public health we tend to use census tracts a lot, but one of the things that we found using this different data from different sources, the common denominator, if you will, was zip code. So that's where we have focused all of our GIS mapping, is on the zip code level. Like I said, we used the questions, we modified them for specific disability types or vulnerability types, and then we began to analyze it. Once we started analyzing it and putting it together in the snapshot, we took it to the next level of developing GIS maps for each of these population groups. And one of the things that we've really tried to do is to make the maps actually tell a story. I'm not a GIS wizard. I can tell our GIS guide, this is what I want, and miraculously this map appears. But it does tell a story of what it, when you look at that map, you can see very clearly. And this is an example of one of the maps that we've done with the over 65 population. You can see that the different concentrations where your heavy concentrations of over 65 are in the dark purple. Also on there are all the hospital, the ALFs, the other facilities and such, as well as the surge zones. So you see where the impact of a surge could be. This is another with the dialysis. And one of the things we did with the dialysis facilities, we developed a tiering mechanism for those that had generator and water hookup. We knew that they, if they're structurally sound, we can bring them up really fast. These are some of the data resources that we had, that we pulled from for the data. And again, it's systematic in its approach. We're developing county profiles for every county using this data. And we also found you can do this on the fly with a no-notice type of event, that you can, using this type of an approach with the people, system, and responders, it can help you focus really what your priorities are during a disaster. We also then took to operationalize the data using a tactical plan, which really focuses on the basics of air, water, food, medicine, and shelter, which is really a modified Maslow, and it's objective-based. So you take that pre-event data that you've compiled, use it as the baseline, use your event assessment data, then you take a time-phased approach to help you prioritize. And again, you're keeping it simple. And this is really what your time phases are and what your concentration of activities will look like in the 0 to 12 hours, the 12 to 24, and the 24 to 48 hours. So really identifying and developing the population profiles are key. One, because you've got them available for individuals, whether it's federal partners coming in, whether it's other state partners coming into a community, or mutual aid between counties, there is some level of baseline knowledge to go into to know what you have available in your community. And you're operating off a standard data set that everybody could talk to each other or use the data from. And keeping it simple, I can't stress that enough. And so really what we're trying to do is going from looking at communities like this to where it's one homogenous group of individuals to really looking at it as each individual group and what their needs are and the uniqueness of those needs and how we best can meet them during a response. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.